And the Rebbe took out his hand, and he moved it around in the air like this, like a circle. He's making a revolution in all of the universes. 360 degree turn. So the Alter Rebbe says, cherish the opportunity. So in summation, even if your entire life you need a fight, don't get sad. Why don't get sad? So there's 2 points, again. Why do people get sad when certain events occur? It's for one of 2 reasons, generally. Either they feel that this thing shouldn't have happened. It was not supposed to happen. And when it does happen, you get sad. You didn't expect it. It's not right. It's unjustified. It's not fair. You get sad. So the Alter Rebbe says, you're wrong. It was supposed to happen. You're not a tzaddik. Expect it. This is your lot. This is how Hashem created you. It's fine. It's not a mistake. It's not because you're evil. It's not because you're wrong. You're not going to get punished for it. You're not a bad person. This is how you were created. It's supposed to be this way. This is your mission in life, to battle the evil in you. Nonetheless, there's a second idea. Even if a person feels, okay, something was supposed to happen, but it still might be evil. It's still not good. So the Alter Rebbe says, wrong, it is good. Nothing reveals godliness in the world as refusing a temptation. So when you're sitting in your office and a negative thought enters into your mind, the Alter Rebbe says, rejoice the opportunity. At this moment, you can smack Sitra Achira. You can smack the unholy, the unhealthy realms in their face and reveal godliness in the world in the deepest way. And perhaps that's your mission in life, to break the lie of Sitra Achira. And this is the Zohar he quotes here, the Zohar from Parshas Truma, where the Zohar actually is talking about another issue. The Zohar there is addressing the great delight that Hashem has when a tzaddik, a righteous Jew, pursues a rasha, a wicked person, with the attempt to bring him back to the good path. And as a result of this, the tzaddik suppresses and subdues the forces of unholiness, of sitra achir, of the other realm. And the Zohar says that yikara d'kutsha b'richu, the glory of Hashem, is elevated through this in a deeper and more powerful way than through any other spiritual service of the Jew. And the Zohar says, why, my taima? Begin the iyu garam le'kafya sitra achira. Because the tzaddik caused that sitra achira, the unholy realm, should be crushed. Zagdal Tereba, tzaddik in his service cannot accomplish this in his personal service. A Beinoni has the ability to accomplish this every day of the week, sometimes every hour of the day. So don't underestimate what you're doing. Don't dismiss it and don't define it as a tragedy. It's not a tragedy. The Alter Rebbe says, realize what's happening. There's nothing that brings godliness into the world as powerful as when a negative thought comes into me and I smack it in its face and I send it flying. At that moment, I shatter the opaqueness, the veil, the husk that characterizes this world, that conceals the truth of spirituality, the truth of my soul, the truth of godliness. It's shattered in this world and in all of the worlds. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is brought into the universe in a revealed way. And as the Alter Rebbe will soon give, we'll learn this next week, a very interesting example for the 2 types of Jews. He's going to say there are 2 types of menus. There are 2 types of foods. There are delicious, sweet delicacies. And then there are foods that are essentially sharp. They're unfit for human consumption. But we know, people know how to prepare them in a way that they become appealing to the human palate. Take onions, garlic, Szechuan sauce, I mean, anybody who takes a bottle of Szechuan sauce and drinks it needs help. Right? Or if you eat up a bottle of salt. But if you mix in the right amount, the right quantity into the right dish, it enhances the entire dish. It becomes delicious. This bitter food that was inaccessible to the human palate suddenly becomes so appealing, so lovable, so tempting. Zok Dal Tzur Rebbe, you know what a tzaddik gives Hashem? A tzaddik offers Hashem a sweet dish. A food that's initially sweet and splendorous and geschmack. He offers Hashem a spirituality. You know what a beinoni gives Hashem? The Jew who strives to be a beinoni gives Hashem sharp foods that have become sweet. The meal that the beinoni presents, what does its menu consist of? The beinoni has... What does the beinoni come to Hashem with every morning, every afternoon? What's the dish he represents to Hashem? The beinoni comes with 20 unhealthy impulses that he had to chase out of his heart. The beinoni comes with another 20 immoral thoughts that he had to dismiss from his mind. The beinoni comes along with another 20 or 30 lusts or appetites or inclinations that he had to smack in the face and run away from. This is his service of Hashem. He takes the evil, negativity, and that becomes the instruments through which he serves Hashem. He serves Hashem with the Sitra Achira. They become the instruments through which he brings Hashem into the world by crushing them, by knocking them down to the ground, by knocking them dead. And such a meal has a special taste. Everybody knows. To use a spice properly in a meal, that course, that dish has a special taste that sweet dishes don't have taste. And that's the special flavor the beinoni presents. These weeks we're learning Parshas Bahar. I saw a Hasidic interpretation by one of the great Hasidic masters on the Pasuk in Parshas Bahar. Umake nefesh behema yishalmena, which literally means someone who smites, who hits. The soul of an animal should pay for it. If you kill somebody's animal, you have to pay for it. So one of the great masters, Reb Uri of Strelitz, known as the Sorof, he was a fireball who would be consumed during davening. He once explained it homiletically. He says, Make nefesh behema, a Jew who smites, who smacks his animal soul, the nefesh of his behema, his animal soul in him, yishalmena. He reaches his shleimus. He reaches his perfection. Yishalmena means you have to pay. Yishalmena also means you reach your ultimate perfection. Which means, thus is your mission in life. That's how you're fulfilling the mission for which you're created. You don't have to be distressed about it. The fact that I have to dismiss extraneous thoughts continuously should not make you distressed. This is your purpose. That you should be tempted, and you should bust the temptation to serve Hashem. Only a tzaddik has a different type of service. And the many Jews have to know this. The maki nefesh behema, the endeavor day after day, after hour after hour, to smack your behema, to control it, to dismiss it. Here lay your mission in life. I want to share with you now something very interesting. And it's also connected to the time. In a few weeks, we're going to be celebrating Shavuos. And according to this year's calendar, we will be making an Eruv Tavshilin, which I will explain in a moment. Shavuos falls out this year on Friday and on Shabbos. And here is the problem that the halacha presents. We all know on Shabbos you're not allowed to cook food. On Yom Tov you're permitted to cook food. But you're permitted to cook food on Yom Tov only to eat on Yom Tov itself. You're not allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov for the following day. So the problem is, every Jewish home wants to prepare for Shabbos. We usually prepare Thursday or Friday. But this year, Thursday and Friday are Yom Tov. And you can't cook for Yom Tov on Yom Tov for the following day of Shabbos. So what do? So the halacha tells us that what we do in such a case is we make an Eruv Tavshilin. We prepare, we cook up two dishes on the day before Yom Tov, which this year would be Thursday. Since Yom Tov is Friday and Shabbos, Shavuos is Friday and Shabbos. I'm sorry if I said it differently. So Thursday is a weekday. So we prepare two dishes on Thursday, which is Erev Yom Tov, a day before Yom Tov, for Shabbos. And we leave these dishes, let's say it's an egg, a boiled egg, and a piece of bread or a piece of fish. We leave it for Shabbos. That means you started to cook for Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. You started to cook for Shabbos a day before Yom Tov. Now the halacha says you're permitted to cook the rest of the food on Yom Tov to prepare for Shabbos. Because you're continuing what you already began. You're now let us start cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos. But if you're completing to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, that's permitted. That's what an Erev Tavshilin is. And here the obvious question is, who are we fooling? Come on, between you and I, if you will be presented for your Shabbos meal with those foods that have been prepared on Thursday before Yom Tov, you're not even going to look at them. We all know that the real food of Shabbos is going to be cooked on Yom Tov, on Friday, not on Thursday. On Thursday you prepare a piece of bread, a hard-boiled egg, it's barely eaten on Shabbos. If that's going to be your Shabbos menu, you're not even going to look that way. So the crux, the majority of the food is being prepared on Yom Tov. It seems like a real loophole. How are we to understand this? I want to offer here the Hasidic interpretation. It's based on the Maharal. The Maharal of Prague in his Sefer Netzach Yisrael, chapter 46, presents an extraordinary explanation to this. It's based on the Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma Daf Chav Ches that Avraham Avinu observed the entire Torah, all of the mitzvahs, and the Gemara says, Afilu Eruv Tavshilin. Avraham observed even the mitzvah of Eruv Tavshilin. And the question the Maharal asks is, you know, why from all the mitzvahs does the Gemara choose this one? The Gemara is trying to tell us that he really observed all of the mitzvahs, but there are many mitzvahs you can discuss. Why does the Gemara decide from all the mitzvahs to choose Eruv Tavshilin, from all the halachas? The deeper explanation for this is as follows. There are three types of days in a Jew's life. There's the day of Shabbos. Shabbos is a day of complete serenity and tranquility. And here I want to ask you, do you ever have a day which you can say this day is a day of exclusive serenity, exclusive tranquility? Right. Nobody's nodding yes. That's basically Mashiach. Yom Shekuloi Shabbos Umenucha L'chaye Ha'ilamim. Mashiach is the real time of Shabbos. When a divine serenity and contentment will pervade the entire cosmos and the universe, that's when we'll be able to really experience Shabbos, a day that will be all Shabbosdik. So Shabbos, every Shabbos is a taste of Mashiach. Shabbos exemplifies the future Messianic era. Then the second category of days are called Yomim Tovim. What do the words Yomim Tovim literally mean? Yom Tov means a good day. Yomim Tovim means good days in plural. Do we ever have good days? Of course. We have many good days. Good days physically, and we often have good days spiritually. Days that we are inspired, we're stimulated, we're motivated, we have vision, we feel connected, and we're enthused by Yiddishkeit, by godliness, by our service of Hashem. And then finally we have Yimei HaChol. Yimei HaChol mean mundane days, boring days, regular days, mediocre days. Sometimes we have good days, and sometimes we have days when we're just very mundane. We feel uninspired, unmotivated, non-stimulated, apathetic, maybe indifferent, cold. Sometimes we're experiencing some very opposite, destructive urges that day. That's a Yom HaChol. It's a very mundane or even profane day. Says the halacha, Yom Tov does not prepare for Shabbos. You can only prepare for Shabbos on a regular weekday. The halacha is telling us, what is the work that prepares, that builds the world of Shabbos, the world of Mashiach? It's the work that's observed and performed on a Yom Chol, on a mundane day. Mashiach is that time in history when godliness will be revealed in the world. What accomplishes it? Yom Tov does not prepare for the world of Mashiach. Yom Tov, which symbolizes psychologically a day or a moment in my life when I have a geshmak, when I'm enjoying my spirituality, when I identify with my soul, that is not what will produce Mashiach. It's the mundane days when I have challenges and I have to fight, and there's turmoil and fragmentation and a dichotomy, and there's a lot of concealment, and I have to crush the Sitra Achira that's an integral part of my life, and I have to subdue it. That reveals Yikara de Kutchabrichu. That creates a nuclear explosion of godliness in the world. Does this mean that a Jew should never have good days, that a Jew should never be inspired, that a Jew should always have negative temptations? Ridiculous. The Tanya itself guides the Beinoni constantly, how during davening he can develop a love for Hashem, and so on and so forth. You just have to begin during a mundane day. But once you begin during a mundane day, you could continue and complete all of the rest on Yom Tov. The Jew ought just to demonstrate that when the moment comes, he can subdue the Sitra Achira. But then he can continue cooking the food for Shabbos on Yom Tov, and that's also when you can prepare for Mashiach. It doesn't have to be a bad day. You don't have to invite negative temptations. You can enjoy your Yiddishkeit. You should strive to enjoy it. You don't need to have negative thoughts. But just once you start off that way, and you demonstrate that you're capable of doing that, then you can continue in an inspired way. It just cannot be limited to moments of inspiration. It can't be confined to Yom Tov. It has to begin with a Yom HaChol. The Gemara in Yuma says that Avraham observed the entire Torah. But one asks the question, big deal. Avraham was an aristocrat. Avraham was a tremendous individual that the whole world looked up to. The Rambam describes in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah how Avraham would travel from city to city, and with his extraordinary oratory skills, he would spread godliness, and Avraham created thousands and thousands of students and pupils and disciples who swallowed up every word of Avraham. Avraham was nominated a prince, a king. Avraham was respected. People experienced reverence in the presence of Avraham. Avraham was a respected revolutionary who revolutionized the world, revealed monotheism. Of course, Avraham observed the entire Torah. Yitzchak and Yaakov had different lives. Yitzchak, the sages tell us, was a Baal Yisurim, a man who suffered his whole life. Yaakov, we know, every decade experienced another tragedy. That they observed the entire Torah, that's something. But Avraham, in his royal mansion, observing the entire Torah, big deal. So the Gemara says, Nay, Avraham observed Erev Tafshilin. He didn't start on Yom Tov. Avraham didn't start off as an international respected figure who everybody wanted to listen to. Avraham started at moments when the whole world was fighting him. Nimrod threw him into a burning furnace. He was ready to sacrifice his life. He paid a price for his Yiddishkeit. Avraham began cooking and preparing the world for Mashiach during the mundane times, not during the good, elevated moments. Once you begin during the mundane times, now you can continue all the rest during the good, elevated days. And that's also a preparation for Shabbos. A story. A Jew once came to the Holy Ruzhin, the Holy Hasidic Master of Yisrael of Ruzhin. He was a Jew who was a merchant. and was extremely burdened by his business interactions, which he needed to support himself, his family, many members of the community. And he lamented to the Rujan, and he says, you know, I never have an hour of peace, of serenity, of tranquility, when I can daven, when I can learn, when I can meditate, when I can reflect, when I can just serve Hashem with a pure heart. And he cried to the Rujan, and he says, why? I can't deal with it. What am I supposed to do? And Yerushalayim listened to the Jew, and then he quoted the words of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that say, Hillel says, Al toimar l'chasha'efna eshna shemaloy sipona. Do not say, when my time becomes vacant, when my time becomes free, when I don't have any more business to take care of, then I will begin learning. Because shemaloy sipona, maybe your time will never be free. Maybe you'll never have free time. You'll always be burdened and stressed. You have to find time now to learn. So the Rujner explained it on a deeper, more spiritual level, and he says, Al taimar lichisha efna eshna. Do not say when I have free time, when I'm stressless, that's when I'll learn Torah. Shema loisipana. Perhaps the mission of your soul was that it should not be stress-free, that it should not have that spiritual freedom and openness. Perhaps your soul is not rooted in the world of resolution, but it originates in the world of tension, and your function and purpose in life is to serve Hashem during moments when loisipana, when you have to struggle, when you have to battle. That's what was meant of you. So when one comes and says, what is the Tanya's solution to the big problem? The big problem that after everything said and done, I cannot experience full-fledged spirituality in a real way throughout my entire life. What's the solution to this problem? I could never really be Jewish. What Judaism really means. I could never really experience my divine soul. As much as I try, there will be other forces luring me, schlepping me down. What's the solution to the problem? You know what Alter Rebbe is saying? The problem is the solution. There is no need for a solution. The problem is not undesirable. It's fine. And what Alter Rebbe did for thousands of Jews must be understood. By many Jews, the path of spirituality became a nice fairy tale that belongs to the highly elevated souls of every generation. But the ordinary Jew knew and knows it's not realistic. It's just not realistic. So we go through the routines, we do the mitzvahs that are easy. And most mitzvahs today are pretty easy to do. But the real path of spirituality remains detached from us. The Alter Rebbe with chapter 27 literally resurrected thousands of dry bones among the Jewish people by demonstrating that the ladder upon which the Jew ought to climb is not made from heavenly steps and heavenly rungs. It's made from very mundane rungs. The Alter Rebbe demonstrated that the path of Yiddishkeit is applicable to you and to me and to all of us sitting around there. People who experience every day mundane, negative, sinful, immoral, destructive habits, lusts, appetites, and urges. That's whom we are addressing. Karev Elecha Adavar Miyayit. The ladder is made out of very mundane steps. Keep on smacking those impulses in their face. Day in, day out, hour in, hour out, fulfill the purpose for which you have been created. Don't lament it, don't become broken, don't become depressed. Celebrate that opportunity to reveal your divine soul in the space of an animal soul, to subdue the Sitra Achra and to bring godliness into a very physical and mundane psyche, heart, mind, and universe. I'll conclude with the following story. Although it's not directly relevant to the theme of this chapter, but it is an extension of the theme of this chapter. In other words, this story does not convey what the Alter Rebbe is saying here, but it's certainly an extension of the theme that Alter Rebbe conveys in chapter 27 of Tanya. This is a story concerning one of the Hasidim of the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was a grandson of the Baal HaTanya. Now, this Chassid was a pious man, a God-fearing Jew, who Nebach had constantly had to deal with financial stress, and had many, many debts, could never support his family adequately. And one day, a business deal was offered, presented to him. And the business deal looked very promising. And he felt that if he borrows some money and invests in this business deal, the profits will not only allow him to pay up all his debts, but will also give him a very large income that will allow him to support himself in a very comfortable way for a long time. But a chassid doesn't take on a business venture, certainly of enormous proportions, before consulting the Rebbe. So he traveled to Lubavitch, to the Tzemach Tzedek, and he went into the Tzemach Tzedek, who knew very well about his financial condition, and he presented a plan. And the Tzemach Tzedek responded, "I don't think you should do it. Don't get involved." The Chassid could not imagine that the Rebbe would answer it, because it looked so promising. It almost couldn't go wrong. He felt that he was a smart man. Nothing can happen that can go wrong. And it just seemed to him absurd that the Tzemach Tzedek should not want to help him. So he says, "Rebbe, did you understand what I said?" And he repeats the whole plan again. And the Tzemach Tzedek said, "I understood the first time, and I told you already that you shouldn't do it." The Chassid left the room very disappointed, because his last hope to redeem his life and finally live a normal, decent life was just crushed. He couldn't leave home. He goes into the Rebbe again. And he presents the plan a third time. And Tzemach Tzedek listens to him patiently, and when he concludes, Tzemach Tzedek says, "As I told you already, if you want to listen to my advice, you should not get involved with this business, with this investment. Stay out of it." The Chassid returned home, but as it happened, he could not resist his natural inclination to engage in it. It was just too promising, too powerful. He couldn't find any logic besides the Rebbe said no. He went and he did it. He borrowed the money, he invested the money, and he made a lot of money. It was very successful, extremely successful. And he paid up all of his debts. And plus he had a lot of money for himself and for the family. And he was a changed man. He was serene. For the first time he came home, and everything he needed from a financial point of view he had. 6 months passed, and the Chassid died. His soul returned to its maker. When the family stood up from Shiva, they traveled to the Tzemach Tzedek. And they went into the Rebbe, and they began crying. They said, "Rebbe, we know that our father did not listen to the suggestion of the Rebbe, but did he deserve such a severe punishment for it? We understand he did something wrong. He behaved in an improper way for a chassid not to listen to the Rebbe. But did he have to die because of that?" And the Tzemach Tzedek responded and he said, "Chas v'shalom, heaven forbid. Do you suspect me that I wanted to punish him because he didn't listen to my advice and he died because I intervened, defending my honor for him not heeding my voice? Chas v'shalom, heaven forbid.
just let me explain to you something. So Machzadik told him, the Gemara says, apparently he was referring to the Gemara in Masechta Beitza, Taflamet Beizamet Beiz, that there are three types of Jews or human beings that Chayehem Einam Chayim. Their lives cannot be deemed lives. They don't have a life. Their lives are not lives. It's not living. The first is somebody who always has to eat off the table of his fellow man, which means he never has enough money to support himself. He always needs to eat off somebody else's food. The second person is somebody who is his wife, dominates him and controls him. And the third is somebody who's physically ill. Yisurin Moishlin Begufa, his body is afflicted by disease and illness. His life is not a life. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, Chayeyem Einam Chayim literally means their lives are not lives. But the deeper meaning of these words is Chayeyem Einam Chayim. Their life comes from the fact that they don't have a life. There are souls that are rooted in the world of tranquility, and there are souls that are rooted in the world of tension. And the source of life for these souls stems from the fact that Einam Chayim, that they don't have a life. That there's tension, there's turmoil, there's struggle. That's where their life, their soul, receives its vital flow, its energy, its animation. He said, your father of blessed memory, when he rid himself from the struggle, and finally he had a lot of money and no concerns and no dilemmas, he detached his soul from its source of life. I'll finish with another story. A Jew once came to the Shpola Zayd, Reb Arye Leib of Shpola, one of the great masters of his time, a very close friend of the Alter Rebbe. And similar to the previous story with the Ruzhiner, this Jew lamented to the Shpola Zayd about his situation. He was a bartender. He used to rent a tavern, an inn, from a local poritz, a local overlord. And he would rent out the inn, and he also had a bar with which he would feed and quench the thirst of many Russian peasants who would come to have a swig of vodka or of scotch. And this chassid lamented to the Shpola Zayd, he says, all day I'm surrounded by local peasants who are coarse, who are very unrefined. I have to hear their coarse language all day. How can I serve Hashem this way? It's so frustrating. It's so annoying. He says, you know what type of vocabulary I have to listen to? What type of jokes? What type of conversations? All day and all night, this is what I'm listening to. So the Shpola Zayda responds to him and he says, my dear Yid, let me share with you something. What do you want? This is what you want. You want to be in a home that's surrounded wall to wall by holy books. You want there should be no distractions from without. You want to sit in that room 24 hours a day, learn Torah, daven, and think about Hashem. That's what you want. And the Jew says, yes. So the Shpola Zayda says, let me tell you something. Creatures like that, Hashem has by the millions and billions. All of the angels. He says, what do you think all the angels do? The angels sit in paradise or in the transcendental spiritual worlds, surrounded by spiritual energy, living in an ambiance of godliness and spiritual ecstasy constantly and continuously. And all day they sing, they dance, they pray, they learn, and they meditate, and they live with godliness. Hashem wanted you to be in a physical world that's devoid of spirituality, in which you have to struggle within and without, forces without and forces within. And there you should subdue the negative energy and bring godliness in the world. For that purpose, this world was created and our souls came into this world for it. Have a wonderful day and a great week.
Yes. That's a very good it's a very important remark you just made. In fact, you're asking, perhaps, the method what he discusses at the conclusion of chapter 26, that you create a specific time for grieving and remorse, and you do tshuva, and then you continue. But maybe the tshuva was not good. So that's why the Alter Rebbe says, V'yamin emuna shlema ki Hashem hevir chatasi. You should believe with complete faith that Hashem has removed the sin. And the reason he says this is because, indeed, he is cautioning us here, although he doesn't mention it explicitly, he's cautioning us against another method that the negative inclination employs. The first method it employs is, ach, you're such a low life. It's of course spiritual, it's not physical. We discussed last week, the tzahara in the middle of your business won't come to you and cause you anxiety over physical issues, because you'll immediately realize that it's coming from the tzahara. Over senseless issues to become upset about. But he'll say, ach, you did so many avaris in your life. You have wrecked your soul. You have been abusive to yourself and to others. Who are you? What are you? You're worthless, you're valueless, you're insignificant. And the reason he is doing this is not because he's interested in you rectifying that spiritual state. It's just, as we discussed last week, the next step immediately following that is taivus. You become frivolous, irresponsible, and just start following your lusts and urges, which are unhealthy lusts and urges. The next method he employs, when you're doing tshuva already, you're doing tshuva. You're a liar. We know you're a dishonest person. You were always dishonest. You're still dishonest. Punkt, your tshuva now is sincere. Suddenly you became earnest. Hashem is a truthful being. Hashem despises falsehood, despises lies. Well, you're going to bribe him with your words, even with your tears, your crocodile tears. They're absolutely insignificant. So what do we feel? Oh, this is coming from the truth in us. It's a true voice. This is our soul's voice. So when the Alter Rebbe says V'yamin emuna shleima ki Hashem hever chatosai, it's a powerful statement. And actually, someone pointed out last week that one should believe with complete faith that Hashem has removed the sin. The Rebbe is taking full responsibility in saying it. It's a statement which is powerful. V'yamin emuna shleima, Hashem responds to you. Not take it for granted. Take it for certain, exactly, not for granted. What you put in, he reciprocates. What you asked for, he will give you. There's no need now to engage in this again and again. Obviously, in tshuva, there are levels and gradations, and one can always grow, and Alter Rebbe will discuss that in chapter 29. And furthermore, when a human being reaches a higher spiritual state, issues of the past that were not considered negative are sometimes now experienced as negative, because you're much more sensitive to subtle distortions and so forth. That is true. But we are now talking about, but that's the process of life, where a human being undergoes shifts and transitions and changes of experience and so forth. But we're talking now in your present situation. If man experienced and experienced remorse over a certain behavior, he expressed his grief over it, Hashem responded. He has forgiven you. What do you want to say? Okay, it's a good point. The Gemara says in Kiddushin Daf Mem Tes, I think it is, that Hamakadosh is a Isha Manas, that he's a tzaddik. Someone marries a woman, he does the act of Kiddushin on the condition that he's a tzaddik. That's part of the condition. But he's a Rasha Gamur. Zog the Gemara, that's Safik Makodeshus. Why Shema Hira Tshuva Beliba Ivanasa Tzaddik? Perhaps this man experienced a hero thought of tshuva, and he has been transformed into a tzaddik. The reason it's a Safik edition is not because the din, we have a question of this din is, if the halacha is so. Because we don't know what is happening in another human being's mind, so thus we don't know if he indeed experienced the hero tshuva. But if we were certain that he experienced the hero tshuva, he becomes a tzaddik. And the Erzaruah and Simen Kuf Yud Beis is Geir is Shema Hira Tshuva Beliba Ivanasa Tzaddik Gamur. He becomes a complete, an absolutely complete tzaddik. Thank you. But the point being here is that a human being grieved, a human being expressed his remorse, a human, the Jew, asked for forgiveness. Hashem has forgiven him.
I just wanted to ask, maybe a person, he had the grief in the middle of the day, and he answered his Yetzer Hara by saying, okay, I'll do tshuva, but not now is not the time. He said a time later, and later on, he wants to do tshuva, which is already something great, but he doesn't really feel, maybe he's fooling himself, maybe he doesn't really feel remorse, maybe he didn't actually feel remorse in himself. If he actually felt the sincere remorse, then he should have complete faith Hashem to give him. But sometimes, you know.
So if he knows he wasn't sincere, so then he knows he wasn't sincere. Even in human beings, the other person responds. There's a relationship, the other person forgives. Obviously, if you do the same thing again and again and again, Dr. Rebbe says in Negeres HaTshuva, that's the difference. We say three times a day, Slach lono avinu kichatanu, Baruch Ata Hashem chanan amar b'lislayach. Dr. Rebbe says there's a difference between a human being and God. And he says a gevaldik avart. Hashem's attributes are infinite. So his attribute of rachamim, of empathy, is also infinite. So therefore, notwithstanding man's recurring mistakes and errors, willingly or unwillingly, there can never be another situation because his rachamim essentially is infinite. But the Alter Rebbe asks a question, how do you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Chanan Amar B'Lisloyach, blessed art thou Hashem, who forgives us, Amar B'Lisloyach. It's a bracha l'batala. It's a blessing of him. How do you know if he forgives you? You're not going to make a bracha on Allah Safik. A bracha l'batala is a serious issue. You're mentioning Hashem's name in vain. Baruch atah Hashem, that what? That he's marvelous. Like, how do you know? Zak dal terebbe. If you said slach lanu avinu kichatanu, he forgave you. You don't have to second guess the situation. If you're creating a relationship, he's there. But the Yetzer Hara doesn't like that. No, really, you have to be truthful. What do you have to be truthful? You're upset about what you did, you asked for forgiveness, he forgave you. Continue your life now with vigor. Doesn't mean you didn't make a mistake. But don't allow that mistake to paralyze you, to immoralize you, to overtake your life now. I'm false, essentially, inherently. No, you did something false. We have falseness in us. And now you grieved it. And now you corrected it. And go on.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.